Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me today on the Class War Battlefield podcast. Please do me the honor of supporting this work that I am doing. I've been doing this work now for free on your behalf for, my God, 11 years. 5, 10, 20, 50. If you can afford it, please do. Cash at me at $CWB Podcast. CWB Podcast. Cash App it. CWB Podcast. Also, hit me up on PayPal. CWB Podcast. All the way across the board, y'all. Help me out. Thank you for donating and enjoy the show.
Now, the definition.
If you, as a white person, would be happy to receive the same treatment that our black citizens do in this society, please stand. You didn't understand the directions. If you, white folks, want to be treated the way blacks are in this society, stand. Nobody's standing here. That says very plainly that you know what's happening. You know you don't want it for you. I want to know why you're so willing to accept it or to allow it to happen for others.
I spent my years isolated, couldn't live with myself. I was troubled as a young kid, my tears didn't help. Manic depression was evident, I'd fade in the deep. All alone with these four walls came in me. Barricaded was my mind state, I wanted to die. Never happiness, just sad times, living a lie. Rather leave it, I was suicidal, splitting my wrist. Mama thinking I was crazy, like using a fist. Was gonna change how I was feeling, I was pain inside. Wasn't me, it was my inner feelings coming alive. I remember waking up like I was headed for school. Left me standing in the hospital, locked in this room. Put away, I'm a troubled kid, losing my mind. Falling short of what they expected from me every time. So don't fault me if you meet me and I look to be strange. I'm just laughing at the sunshine and dying already.
Sunshine to the pain. When it comes, it goes again. Even when the story ends, just turn the page and begin again. Your sunshine, a cloudy day. Don't hate me, I won't ever change. Thankful I was made this way. Your sunshine, my cloudy day.
Now I was raised in the neighborhood where power would die. If you was real, it was understood, it showed in your eyes. Every corner had a different hustle sprawled in your face. Drug wars on an uproar, survived the chase. Struggle addict had to move along, quiet as kept. Spoken words got you dealt with, so ride with yourself. I'm a juvenile, they telling me get down for your wealth. No getting high, cause when you get high, you have to get help. As far as health, mine was mental though, you know how that go. Psychologically, I deal with demons talking in codes. Hopefully, I get to meet Jesus somewhere on this road. Sick of hearing people screaming in my head saying no, right?
All right, so Scott Adams has been in the news, and I did more than listen to a 42-second clip. I actually listened to an hour and 51-minute rant of his conversation, which people took 42 seconds. And then I listened to an interview he did because I was like, I never thought of, I'm pretty good with people, you know, and Dilbert didn't seem to be offensive, you know, as a cartoon. So when this came out and when I saw the clip, I was like, there's something more to this. So let me really listen, because I want to be fair. I don't want to do what everyone else is doing, which is discussing something off of a clip, off of a, you know, even if you watch 10, 20 minutes. Smith is mad at me because I sent him the whole thing and made him pick up. Although he was like, I'm sick of this guy. But I want to first play the clip that has everybody upset. So I'm gonna play the clip number three. Let's play that. We're talking about Scott Adams, the creator of Dilbert, which is now no longer anywhere. Every single outlet that has a newspaper that used to feature it no longer has. He lost his book deal. His agent quit. He lost his agent. His backlist is gone. So he literally set himself on fire. Yep. Is it worth it, Scott? Is it worth it? Are you happy? And I'm going to say probably he is, because he's got nobody was talking about Scott Adams and Dilbert before this. So I'm going to say he's winning, even though he might be a loser. All right, play that first clip.
So I think it makes no sense whatsoever as a white citizen of America to try to help black citizens anymore. It doesn't make sense. It's no longer a rational impulse. And so I'm gonna back off from being helpful to black America because it doesn't seem like it pays off. Like I've been doing it all my life and I've been, the only outcome is I get called a racist. That's the only outcome. It makes no sense to help black Americans if you're white. It's over. Don't even think it's worth trying.
Poor guy.
Yeah. So I did like you, Karen. I watched the whole thing and I was like, oh God.
Wow. Yeah. So a few things, first of all, he's not a victim, even though he's playing the role of one. And he's very rich. And he even said, I like attention. I'm an energy monster. This is when he was on Hotep Jesus, this black guy that he sat with for another hour and change. So right there, he's telling you he loves attention. He's an energy monster, because I kept asking, why is he doing this? But apparently, Renee and everyone listening, he's been doing this.
Yes.
He's been done. Like he has like 700 clips on his YouTube channel, 702, I think. Like he's been doing this. And I was thinking about this because there's a part in it where he talks about when he was in corporate America being told that he wouldn't get promoted because he was white and he was a male. And he was fine with it because he just decided to go into an industry where his talent would be enough. And so he started his cartoon. There is a duplicity going on with Scott Adams that I don't really care to examine. There's something else going on. Something happened to him. But I also feel like he's trolling. And I think because he's a humorist, he thinks he's being clever. But your understanding of history isn't deep enough to be as clever as you think you are being right now. Like, I kind of get what he's trying to do, but you are failing because you're starting the conversation not at the beginning.
Right.
You're starting at the harm, your personal harm. You're not starting at the foundation of this country, which is, I would have respected if you said race is a made up construct. What he said was everybody's racist. Well, that's true only because the notion of race is in and of itself problematic, right? Mm-hmm. So if we could get there, maybe we can have a conversation. But if you're not starting a conversation with who made up whiteness, why are you white? Why am I black? What does it mean to be white or black in this country or abroad? And why does it mean to be white or black? If we can't start there, then we really can't have a conversation. But I wanted to play another clip. It's a little longer. But he started this particular rant because Rasmussen, I don't know who the hell is Rasmussen. Who are these people? Yes. The people with these poles, you know, I often joke and say poles are for strippers because I do believe that polls are not, even though they call it a science, it's not really a science because you're literally talking to people who could absolutely lie to you. Yeah. And the way that you frame a question, you and I know as journalists, means everything. So I don't know what they asked these people to come up with this poll that said that the question was, is it okay to be white? Number one, why are you asking that question?
Right.
Is it okay to be white? What kind of question is that?
Yeah.
So the answer came back. 72% of people said, yes, it's OK to be white. And then 53% of black people. And again, who did you talk to? Was it 10 people? Was it 100 people? Where do, what neighborhood?
The
1,000 people. Where? Yeah. Where? Yes. All over? Exactly. Like 53%, which is the majority of black people said, yeah, it's OK to be white. I mean, but this is stupid. Why are you asking me this question? That would have been my question. What's your agenda? But nobody asked that. So his whole hour and 50 minute rant was about this poll. And he said, you know, let me just instead of putting words in his mouth, let me find the one where he said if black. Hold on. Most of. OK, here we go. Clip four.
So here's a black woman who's agreeing that I should feel uncomfortable around populations of black people, because some large group of them would have a reasonable, historically based bad opinion of me. Now, this was my point, right? My point is that some large percentage, and I'm not sure that the Rasmussen poll had exactly the right percentage. One of the things that Hotep Jesus pointed out correctly is that the nature of the question was so open to interpretation that you don't really know where that, you know, would have fallen out if they'd asked the question differently. But whether or not nearly half of all Black people have the opinion, or if it's only 25%, it's still way too much. Way too much. Would you hang around in a group where 25% of them had a bad feeling about you? I recommend getting away from any group where 25% of them have a bad feeling about you. That's just not a safe place to be. And it doesn't matter who you are or what ethnicity you are, et cetera. Like if you were a Black, let's say you're a young Black person and you had a chance to hang around with a bunch of white supremacists, it's probably a bad idea. I'd say run away. Now, let's say that they're not all white supremacists, but let's say they're not condemning them. You know what I mean? They're not white supremacists per se, but let's say there's a group of people who refuses to condemn them for whatever reason. If you were Black, would you hang around with that group of people? I wouldn't. And I would recommend that you don't either.
Well, nice for the recommendation. Unfortunately, we live in America and most Black people don't have an option. Unlike white folk who can run to the hills, we are living where we are living and whiteness is ubiquitous. So like, how do we get away? Because I do believe that there are a lot of people who are not challenging white supremacy and hate. There was a whole hate rally. I didn't see white people in the streets saying this doesn't represent us and go home. I didn't see there be like the pussy hat chicks. Where were y'all? Like, where were you at this rally of hate? Like, for real. The 53% of y'all that voted for Trump, like I don't see there being an outrage around, you know, this nationalism and this hatred that has been fomented in this country forever. So, yeah, like we don't have the luxury with your smug. Ha ha ha.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I watched the out. Like you said, I watched the entire thing. And that part that got him in such hot water was like, what, 10 minutes or maybe whatever. But there were a couple things. Number one, the Rasmussen study or survey or whatever, they surveyed 1,000 people. I'm always weird on surveys because to me, the 1,000 seems so inadequate to try and extrapolate from that 1,000 to, you know, whatever, the entire country. That's the first thing. Rasmussen polls tend to lean right. That's why the former president always use those to show how, you know, his popularity and blah, blah, blah. But that was Rasmussen versus, say, Quinnipiac or what have you. And they also use telephone, landlines when they're doing their surveys, which means they probably tend to skew older and more conservative. So those are things that we have, you know, when you brought it up earlier, who did they ask? Who did they call? That kind of methodology matters because this is how those numbers come out and shake out. What young people do you know that even have a landline? Mike, I don't even think my children have ever used a landline. So, you know, you have that kind of thing. And then, you know, he kept saying that 53% said it was okay to be white. Then the other breakdown was there was a percentage, maybe 27% that said it was not okay. And then maybe 21%, I can't remember the numbers exactly, that were not sure. Okay. So when he was first talking about it, he put all those numbers out. But mm-hmm. in follow-up conversation, he lumped the last two together as the not sure and the ones who said it was not okay. He lumped them together to act as if that group was a hate group and they were all saying it was not okay. So again, when I watched that, there were all kinds of red flags. And I thought, that's not right. That he's not mm-hmm. thinking that's just and that I'd not thought about it before, Karen, but you're right. That does sound like somebody who was just trying to elicit a response.
Yeah. And so as media, you know, I contemplated, you know, should I talk about it? I tend to not give oxygen to trolls. Mm-hmm. And Scott, let's be clear, Scott Adams is a troll. He is trolling. Mm-hmm. He's trolling, and it's interesting how many people are biting, you know, taking the bait, because, you know, as a dyed in the wool, he's not a Nazi. He's, you know, spent his whole career being what he considers a liberal. Now he's more libertarian, you know, politically. So he's playing a really wicked game of, I don't know if it's chicken or he just like, I'm tired of all of the gaslighting, so I'm going to join and gaslight, because I feel like there's a level of gaslighting going on here as well, because he's saying something. And I think in his need to be clever, you're causing more damage. Mm-hmm. And you're also, because judging from what I'm seeing, even with the tweet I tweeted at him, the people that are coming for me, I'm like, you don't even, first of all, you don't know me. Mm-hmm. And even asking, who are you? So Google's your friend, number one. Number two, yeah, don't asking questions about me. You don't even know what my perspective is. You're making an assumption about me based on what, my skin color, of where I would sit on this. You know, we're very deep thinkers here. We're not just going to jump on the bandwagon because everybody's jumping on Scott Adams right now, negative and positive. Right. But I feel like, you know, he willfully came into this space to do something.
Perception is everything. White people look vicious and ugly and non-caring and cruel and arrogant and powerful and condescending and angry. Are you angry?
No.
Oh, good for you. Are you angry?
Trying not to be.
Now, does that take a lot of energy?
Yes.
Yes. Are you holding it in?
Yes.
And are you trying really, really hard not to react to me?
Yes.
Yes. And are you trying really hard not to look at me?
At the moment, yes.
Yes. Why?
Because I don't want to make myself more upset.
You don't want to make yourself more upset by looking at me?
Yes.
Right. Does that take a lot of time, a lot of energy?
Yes.
Yes. Is that hard for you?
Yes.
Could you develop an ulcer over this?
No.
If you had to do it every day, what would happen to your blood pressure?
It would rise.
Yeah. If somebody stood over you and you knew it was going to happen every day, or you expected it to happen every day, or it happened when you didn't expect it to, or it happened to your kids every day, after it happened to your mother every day. Now, getting right along, your hand is still up. You still didn't learn anything, did you? Didn't I just say when your hand is up, you are thinking of what you're going to say instead of what's being said? Didn't I just say that?
Yes, you did.
And did you hear that?
Yes, I did.
And did you decide that you were just going to do it your way?
I was.
Wait a minute, you were on a roll there for a minute.
Yes, I did.
Thank you very much.
Yes, I did.
Now, since you choose to not listen to others, what do you suppose we're going to do where you're concerned?
Not listen to me.
Thank you very much.
Now, finish what I'm saying.
Now, no, please. Because you're still thinking of what you're going to say instead of what I'm saying. Now, getting right along.
I heard what you
well,
were
every,
saying.
You're doing it again.
What you were
you're
saying.
Doing it again.
I don't care.
You're doing it again.
It's wrong.
You're doing it again.
Persecuted her for standing
you're
out.
You're doing it again.
Persecuted him for standing out. The only change that ever happens is when people stand out and I have a snapback.
Martin Luther King Jr. was shot. Are you in any physical danger here? Are you in any physical danger here? Is that girl in any physical danger here? Emmett Till was hanged by his neck after he was beaten almost to death simply because he said, made a statement to a white woman. Every time I do the exercise, there is a point at which I know I have made the point. And we could stop there, but you have to nail it down. And so it goes on longer than some people think it should, but you have to nail it down. People at this institution...
You've made your point, you're right.
Yeah, thank you very much. What is my point that I've made?
That you can't make generalizations about any place because there's racism everywhere.
That's right. And while it may be... No. You don't come back in here until you've apologized to every person in this room because you just exercised a freedom that none of these people of color have. When these people of color get tired of racism... They can't just walk out because there's no place in this country where they aren't going to be exposed to racism. They can't even stay in their own homes and not be exposed to racism if they turn on the television. But you, as a white female, when you get tired of being judged and treated unfairly on the basis of your eye color, you can walk out that door. And you know it won't happen out there. You exercise the freedom they don't have. If you're going to be in here, you're going to apologize to every black person in this room. And do it now.
And the Latinos.
I'm sorry. And the Latinos. Every person of color.
There's racism. This country.
Bullshit! No, you're not going to say, I'm sorry, there's racism. You're going to apologize for what you just did.
I will not apologize because it is not a matter of race always.
Out. Out. Now, is she choosing to leave?
Yes.
Yes. She could apologize and stay.
I won't play the wrong game anymore.
It's not going to hurt her to apologize.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
What's going on in this room alone? Once she leaves it, that's it. It's over with.
Okay. That ain't going to hurt her. Is it going to hurt her?
She, according to action, it is killing. It's killing her.
Yeah.
Storm is rising against the privileged minority of the earth.
This is why I say it's liberty or it's death. It's freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody.
This is an NBC News Hotline special report.
We're at a turning point in the history of this nation. We need to stand for freedom. There's an escalating authoritarianism and even a creeping fascism. Freedom is precious. If we don't fight for it, you lose it.
This much is clear.
We must rebel.
This is our country. We have always lived in it. We were happy. Then you came. We have to protect ourselves. We have to save our country. We have to fight for what is ours.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I swear, you just heard a bit about the Dilbert creator. And what he said about black folks from a video, Dilbert is canceled because of Scott Adams' black rant. Let's be very clear. My name is Brian Mayer Diesel Gaia, by the way. This is Class War Battlefield Podcast. The reason I opened it up the way that I opened it up was because I had it set. I had the episode picked out. I've recorded so many episodes in the last 3 weeks, should I say. And I had picked out one for this week. I have like two for next week, two for the week after. I'm good. And then this story just falls into my lap and I'm like, I cannot not talk about this. I really can't. This has to be talked about. So here I am. Let's start off with this fact. Because, look, the creator of Dilbert is facing some backlash over what he said. One, he's not being canceled. That's not what's happening. What is happening is he is being released from the financial obligations of contracts that he signed based on what those businesses think are the best to do for their long-term success. That ain't being canceled, man. You're a business decision. Now, considering you've written Dilbert for all these years on business decisions, on capitalism. You figured, I figured you would know that. You're a business decision. You ain't being canceled. I mean, I wish cancel culture was as real as white people are making it. I really do. I wish black folks had that kind of power. Because let me explain to you, before I actually get into talking about this poll and all this other stuff, let me explain to you what would really happen if black people had that power. If we had the power to wave our hands and make white corporations change what they were doing, do you know what would be the first thing we'd do? Actually, the first two things we would do? A lot of these companies that profit from our culture, selling it to the world, do you know where they make most of their products? They make them in overseas sweat shop factories. The first thing that we would change is many of those millions of jobs. No lie, y'all, millions of jobs that are profitable because of our culture. We would wave our fingers and the canceling would happen in reverse. Those millions of jobs, maybe even up to 10 million jobs, would be brought back to the United States and would be transplanted into the black communities. That's the first thing we'd do. Second, our communities would have majority stakeholders in all of these companies. You notice what I didn't say there, right? I didn't say we'd get back at the white man. We'd cancel every white person that made us angry. No, because you know something? Contrary to what a lot of white people think, and I've been telling folks this my whole life, and when I say my whole life, I'm not talking the last 10 years. I'm talking about since I was in high school. Contrary to what white folks think, we don't obsess about you. What is happening, and the reason why the Dilbert creator is losing his money train, is because these companies are forecasting, especially the larger ones, these companies, and he knows this. This bugs me so much because this fool knows this. They're forecasting out 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now. And you know what they see 20 years from now? There's a book, by the way, that I read years ago called Born to Buy. And it talks briefly about how corporations in the 1990s and 1980s were developing strategies to develop long-term brand loyalty in children. They were doing everything from studying infant psychology to childhood psychology to teen year psychology to young adult psychology, just so they can create brand loyalty. In my generation, the millennials, I mean, granted, it went back before that, but they wanted people like me, who in the mid-80s and late 80s were children, to still have brand loyalty in our 30s. And some of us still do. Which is what is scaring these companies now. Because see, again, they're planning 5, 10, 15, 20 years out. And you know what they're seeing in 2043? They're seeing a world in which the United States is a majority non-white. I refuse to call us a minority because globally, we are the majority. We are the majority. We are the majority. And we've always been the majority. We kept the land healthy by maintaining a healthy population, y'all. But the reason Europeans were able to take the land from us was because they spread a gospel of overproduction in their loins. We have been the majority. And now we are going to be the majority again. And these companies, fearful of what's going to come around the corner first in 10 years, which is already starting to show right now, a consciousness among not only black and brown and yellow people, but and red people, my red brother, my red bone brothers and sisters, but also young white people who are saying racism no more. Not a lot of them, not enough of them, but still a number that is scary because of the position that those white kids are going to be in. A young white friend of a friend said something that they repeated to me recently, last year actually. "It is in my best interest to be nice to black people," she said. "Not because I'm afraid of them, I would still be nice to them. Not because I don't want to be, I would still be nice to them. But someday soon, I'm going to be outnumbered. And I would prefer to be on their side than to be thinking that I'm better than them and not be on this side." I ain't like some of it, but it was what it was. I'm like, okay, I feel you. Now, some of you white folks listening would say, "Oh, she doesn't have white pride." I've had that conversation with my white friends for a long time. Well, why is it okay for there to be black power and not white power? Why is there okay to have black pride but not white pride? Nobody said it wasn't okay for you to have white pride. We want to know what you're going to do with it, because we know historically what you've done with it. No one said it was wrong for you to have white power. Again, we want to know what you're going to do with it, because again, there is a historical trend that we keep referencing. We know what you've done with it in the past, so what are you going to do with it in the future? Or, hell, even just the near future. This is a deep one. And I'm going to piss some people off, but maybe it's about time. So let's talk about this. I'm going to start with this idea that he mentioned about getting away from black people, because we are the problem. There ain't no fixing this. Black people, the majority of them don't trust white people. And maybe the majority of us don't even like white people. But it's funny, because if you are a white person who's down with black folks, you ain't never going to know that, are you? Because white people who are down with black people know. We're quite good with treating people nice. We always have been. Now, a lot of people are interpreting this, and I think correctly so, for the mind state of white folks. They're interpreting this as a poll that proves what right-wingers have been saying for a long time. Oh, black people are reverse racist. I've had this conversation with y'all before, so I'll run over it very quickly. Racism, for a lot of white people, for some odd, strange reason, because they don't act this way, when they're asked about what they believe racism is, it's, oh, well, you just don't like a person, or you call them bad names, or you have preconceived notions about them. No, that's prejudice. Calling them bad names isn't even discrimination or anything. It's just calling them bad names. And not liking a person is not liking a person. That's not racism. Racism is systemic. That's the ism part of it. It is the coordination of intent. And it is the coordination of a commitment or a coordination of a covenant towards a certain vision, a goal. That's racism. When you codify it in law, then that's what they call not judicial. I can't think of the name. I can't. There's a legal term for it, which was what was alive in Jim Crow South. And I was like, I think it's like juridical or something like that. But either way, it's legal racism. It's codified into law. And then when it becomes so automatic that it's culture, that it's cultural, that's epigenetic racism. And people, you know, people are making the arguments recently, well, babies aren't born racist. They could, you know, they have to learn it. I don't believe that. I do not believe that. When something becomes so culturally ingrained, it literally, and this is scientific fact now, it changes your DNA structure. So what I tell people is babies can be born predisposed to racism, and some of them are born racist. The goal of education is to change bad behaviors, even if it takes a couple of generations to do so. That is the highest goal of education. Babies can be born racist, but it is what you do when they come out that womb that will determine how bad that racism is. So it's kind of like this. A family of four. Two mothers. Well, it could be two mothers now. But a mother, father, and four children. So technically a family of six. So the parents don't like black people. They're racist. Two of the children don't like black people. They're racist. The third one, kind of on the fence. The fourth one, I love black people. What's wrong with y'all? What happened? How did that happen? Now, for a person like the guy who created Dilbert, he might say, well, why does it got to be like that? Son, I know families like that. I'm speaking from experience here. 40 years old as a black man. I'm speaking from experience here. What happened? How did that one kid come out without that? Without that baggage? Just because the cultural ingrainment is deep doesn't mean that that line cannot produce somebody that breaks that mold. Because sometime in the past, that cultural ingrainment wasn't there. Just like I know a family, three kids, two parents. All of the family is loving, beautiful-souled, wonderful people, and boom, there's cousin John, I think is his name. Racist as can be. And I didn't understand it because it's like, I know your parents. How the heck did you get out of there with that? And then I discovered that the mother's side and the father's side both have, generation and a half ago, significant racial ties to the South. Significant. Now, when I hear people talk about reverse racism, I laugh. It's like, dude, black people ain't got that power. We don't. What reverse racism would entail, would require, is that black people have such an institutional force within their community and behind them that is independent from the state here in the USA, kind of like Israel has. We would have to have that and the capacity to reach into the life of any white person and disrupt their life. That would be racism. That would be reversed racism. That would be racism that you cast onto us and then we reverse it onto you. We don't have that power. Now, I'm not trying to convince you, because if you believe it, you're going to believe it. It's, well, other black people and white people of goodwill that I'm talking to now. We don't have that institutional fortitude to develop something called reverse racism. God, do I wish we did sometimes. But we don't. Remember what I started off talking about? If we could wave our hands to cancel anything, the stuff that I picked was financial. And by the way, here's the funny thing about that is, if we could bring those 10 million jobs into the black community, with majority stakeholders in those companies that are profiting from our culture, do you know something? We wouldn't stop white people from working there. We wouldn't prevent some of those jobs from going to the white community, particularly the poorer parts. We would encourage it because we are kind-hearted people. Reverse racism for us, in all honesty, would be the dismantling of the boundaries that not only hold us back, but surprise, 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 that hold all people back. Let me tell you something that you all don't know. Thank you to Baba Obatashaka for this information. All of you white conservatives running around quoting Martin Luther King, you don't even know why you're doing it. I do. Oh, I do. And those of you listening right now taking notes, you know why too. But let me tell you something about my Martin Luther King conservatism that most of y'all don't know. Martin Luther King was a brother raised by a brother and sister who both were raised by brothers and sisters who both were raised up by brothers and sisters in the community we call black. Back then it was Negro, but today we call it black. We call it African. Dr. King was a product of the black African-centered community. Up until the time he went to Stanford, he cut his teeth and grew his inches in nothing but black institutions. He was a brother so deep down that when he spoke that sing-songy voice, that's African. That sing-songy voice, I've been to the mountaintop. That's African, y'all. We won't be moved today. Ooh, that's African. He was black. He was African. And his philosophy followed suit. Yes. And I would pray that the King Center soon hurries up with releasing the next volumes in their series of speeches and such, because he has a lot to teach all y'all. Yes, he often couched his philosophy in white scholars, because that's what he had to do during the time period. But the philosophy, especially the humanistic philosophy that he drew from, that came from the black community, y'all. That's innate in us. We have a problem with doing dirt and harm to people. And I know most of y'all don't believe that because you're like, yeah, but look at your community. Look at how much violence is there. Yeah, let's look at the same communities when it was white people and Jewish folks there. 120 years ago, crowded up, and how much violence they produced. Oh yeah, y'all don't want to really talk about that, right? But we don't like doing harm to others. I mean, think about it. As I've said to y'all before, with everything that we've been through in this country, how many times has black folks really got together to kill a whole bunch of white people who actually didn't do anything to them? I'm saying just let's go out there and slaughter a whole town of them. It hasn't happened. Because it's innate in us. We care about humanity. But this it's us who a person like this fool is out here talking about. Oh, they're a terrorist group. A terrorist group? Man, I've been wanting to do an episode on what if black people had done ... that conservatives did. I might have to do that soon, because this mother hush your mouth done pissed me to write. Anyway, let's move on. This next point I've spoken on before, but I'm going to speak on it quickly here too. The idea of prejudice. Because one of the biggest things that I find myself presently talking to people about is the idea of prejudice. Actually, should I do that now or should I wait? No, I'm going to wait for that. I'm sorry. I usually don't switch this up, but I'm going to switch this up really quickly. No. I'll do that. Real-time production here, guys. Real-time. Anyway, so prejudice. Let's talk about white prejudice versus black prejudice. When I was younger, I didn't understand that there was actually a difference. And as I've gotten older and I've seen it in action, nobody had to tell me this, I saw it in action. That's when I was like, oh, there is a difference between black prejudice and white prejudice. The reason white prejudice is looked down upon and batted down is because white prejudice is usually built on lies and myths that they want to be true. That's why. That's why. Whereas black people's prejudice is built on, okay, I can't trust you. I can't trust you. I can't trust you. Not because I don't want to, but because you've demonstrated some stuff that tells me historically that I shouldn't trust you. It's built on experience. It's built on experience. That's what I'm saying. Oh, but all prejudice is wrong. No. 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 When you see a certain animal, you have a prejudiced attitude towards because your innate, inherent self tells you that is a dangerous animal. You do what you can to stay away from that animal. Now, you might say, well, wait, are you comparing white people to animals? No, I'm using it as an example. I'm using it as an example. For black folks, the best way to do this is this, okay? Every time there's a major blow-up where black people get into the streets because some black guy, woman, are murdered by police officers, and it's really heinous, it's really bad, and even white people are like, ooh, yeah, that's rough. The stories start to pour out from liberal people and some progressives about what black people have told them in private. And I remember Jesse the Body Ventura talking about one of his black friends who he rode with putting, you know, they get in the car, I guess, and his friend sets his wallet on the dash. And, you know, Jesse's like, what are you doing? What's going on with the, what? And he goes, oh, so if I get stopped by a cop, then I don't have to reach or anything like that. I can just pull out my license and there you go. Then they ain't got no, you know, business really pulling their gun or anything. And Jesse was like, whoa, what? What? You do this every time? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I can make it home okay. Think about that. Think about the forethought, because that's prejudiced. That's prejudiced. Oh. But think about the forethought that goes into that. How do I decrease the possibility of me, forget about becoming an evening story on the news, how do I decrease the likelihood of an encounter with a law enforcement officer turning not only violent but deadly for me. I have to think ahead like that so I don't become a statistic. That's prejudiced. Just as it was prejudicial for, the brother from Minneapolis to tell the police, yo, just to let you know, I have a registered firearm, so you won't be surprised. And he still got shot. One prejudice is built on myths and lies that they want to be true. The other one is built on experience. The problem that Mr. Dilbert doesn't understand. No, I can't say he doesn't understand. He just don't care. He just doesn't care. I'm done saying that these people don't understand because they understand. They just don't care. The problem with them is that he doesn't care. He just don't care. He doesn't care that black people have been trying to, you know, for centuries, explain the anxiety that we feel in this society. And of course, I know what some of y'all are saying. Well, if you don't like it here, why don't you go back to Africa? You leave Africa then. Fine, we'll go back to Africa. How about you leave there? Pick up everything that you didn't build because, contrary to popular beliefs, y'all really didn't build nothing while you were there. And get out. And we'll go happily back there and build it up. Oh, but. Here's why y'all won't. A friend of mine asked me a question after Black Panther came out. Now, I've only seen bits and pieces of Black Panther. I haven't actually sat through the whole thing. But he said, you know, do you really think, like, Africa could have built something like that? And I go, like, what? And he goes, like, Wakanda? And I kind of looked away a little bit. And I looked back at him. I go, you ever heard of Egypt? He goes, yeah. And I go, how many mysteries are still out there that white people have been trying to solve and they just can't? And he kind of chuckled. He goes, there's quite a bit. And I'm like, and yet you're going to ask me if black people could have built a Wakanda? Yeah, good point. That's why they won't leave. Y'all want to really know what the slave trade was about? And this is just my opinion. Years ago, I learned about the Moors. And the Moors being in Europe. And the Europeans owing their new reality to the Moors. Oh yeah, ladies and gentlemen, the Renaissance that just kind of happened in Europe didn't just kind of happen. It was sparked by the invasion of and the enculturation from the Moors, who, contrary to people in this country who like to falsify history, were black. And if you don't believe me, that's fine. You don't have to believe me. Type in the word blackamoor. Black, B-L-A-K. Or excuse me, B-L-A-C-K, A-A-Moor, M-O-O-R. Do some research on the contributions of the Moors in Europe. But first, do some research into the state of Europe when they got there. It'll shock you. It will shock you. The state of Europe when they entered and took over a portion of it. By the time the Moors were driven out, and they really equalized a lot of things in various parts of Europe and helped them out drastically. They established the first universities, built some of the first non-Roman roads, and lit them, restructured whole societies, kicked off again the Renaissance. They resurrected Latin as a primary language. They helped to reform the language. They helped to lay the cultural foundations for, and I suspect, the institutional knowledge for what became Shakespeare and Shakespearean language. They elevated spiritual practices, religious practices, they changed Europe. And before they were driven out of Europe, they revealed what they had learned from the Phoenicians. And they had learned, or at least this is how I've read, or what I've read from it, they had learned from the Phoenicians and other groups that shall remain nameless, about the route that went from Africa into the Caribbean, which had been being used, contrary to popular beliefs, for a couple thousand years by that time. Yeah, they weren't just like doing these small little boats either. They were doing real large ships in some areas of Africa. I know folks like to think otherwise, but the Arabs who came in destroyed a lot of infrastructure. And for good reason. You know, you can't take over people if they're stronger than you. You come in when they're weak, and you weaken them up even more. Anyway, when the Moors were driven out of Europe, what they did was admired. They changed the culture of Europe for the better. And when America was, quote, discovered, because of what the Europeans had been told and taught by the Moors, it is my belief that looking at where the countries in Europe had been prior to the Moors and where they were at the conclusion when the Moors were driven out led the Europeans, including the Vatican, to say, we need to get some more than black people, because if we ever going to try and build something, they got it. They got it good. And they went to Africa and did exactly that. They got them black folks to build their world. Now, for those of you who want to say, oh, that's fanciful and stupid, and slavery has always been, yes, slavery has always been there, you're right. But again, I point you to De Tocqueville, who said ancient slavery in Europe was different because it wasn't based on color. They made our color the mark for enslavement. And by the way, the argument that that's what we were fit for comes from what the Moors did for them. Like, people really do wonder, like, why did it seem like it took about 300 years, a little bit over, for European society to peak, and then it's been all downhill since. Now, you would say, oh, that's not true. Look at all the technology. If that's all you're thinking that I'm talking about when it comes to civilization, then you are in big trouble. Big trouble. During their treks around the world, they kept running into humanistic people. People who had a humanistic view of life, similar to the Moors. And when they finished sickening these people, conquering them, destroying them, minimizing them. That old culture that the Moors had helped to kind of shape out of them began to rise to the surface again. It is that bare bone, I don't care about nothing but the exploitation and the grounding down of my enemies and the people who don't want to fight back. I'm going to subjugate them and exploit them until exhaustion type of culture that led to the speeding up, the dirty speeding up, which we now see may threaten our existence on this planet. I'm sorry, not mine, but Europeans are threatening theirs. That led to the speeding up of that industrial revolution, which then led to the first global industrial war. We call it World War I. And then the second global industrial war. Call that World War II. And since the end of World War II, we've been in a colonialist war that has been prolonged, another industrial war that has been prolonged, to kill off as much of the human ethic throughout the planet as possible. Bringing possibly, what is it, dark America to the world. One of my elders points this out when it comes to Europe. In the dark ages. And he studied global history. He said, look, throughout the world, when Europe was experiencing a dark age, everybody else was experiencing an enlightenment. If it had not been for the Moors, Europe would have wallowed in darkness. But the Moors saved y'all. Black people, we still trying to do it. But see, I have some bad news for y'all. Because we also care about the planet. We got a limited amount of time to try to save y'all and still save the planet. So y'all might want to get y'all minds right. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, I am your brother, Vimer Dees Ogaya. Yo, if you can, support my work. CWB Podcast, you can hit me on Cash App, throw a $ in front of it. CWB Podcast, CWB Podcast. Hit me up on PayPal also. Got that. There was a problem with PayPal. I actually just straightened it out. Send it to me. Let me see it. Let me have it. If you can do it, thank you. I appreciate it. $2, $5, $10, $20, $50, whatever you can do. Make it monthly, y'all. Help me build this thing. I'd like to do this full time. I am your brother, Vimer Dees Ogaya. Questions, comments, concerns, you can always reach out to me. You know I love hearing from y'all. Until the next one, y'all. Peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone, and there are lies in the balance.